Before the Revolutionary War, the tavern founded by Samuel Francis in Lower Manhattan was a meeting place for the Sons of Liberty. The Patriots spearheaded New York's version of the Boston Tea Party there during the Revolutionary War. The tavern actually took a British cannonball through the roof. After the Revolutionary War, George Washington bid farewell to his officers in the tavern. New York was the country's first capital. The Department of War and Finance were housed there. The tavern continued on for years. It became known as the Francis Tavern. It was the Queen's Head for a while. Now it's still the Francis Tavern. Its last true brush with history was really a brush with infamy, and it came 40 years ago, a tragic brush. January 24th, 1975, Puerto Rican nationalists set off a bomb in the Francis Tavern annex, injuring 50, killing 4 people. One of those killed was a banker named Frank Connor. Frank Connor's son, Joe Connor, is here today. He still works trying to get justice for his dad and have people remember what happened in the Francis Tavern. Hello, Joe. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike.
So you were 9. Your dad was only 33. He was at a business lunch. Were you shielded from details, or were you told pretty early on a lot about what happened that day?
I think we were shielded from detail. That day I remember specifically because I had turned 9 on January 20th. And my brother had turned 11 on January 13th, and we were going to be celebrating our birthdays that night. It was a Friday night. So literally that night when it happened, we had come home from school. We went out to play as we always did. My mom called us in and said, you know, something had been terribly wrong and your father was missing. There had been an explosion downtown. So we waited, and finally people came from his job and told us what had happened. And it was crushing. I mean, it's crushing for a 9-year-old to be told that his hero is just taken like that. But the details of it, we didn't really look at the details of it. We really focused on growing up and going to school. My mom set the tone that night when my grandmother, my father's mother, who my father was an only child, when she came over and I asked her, Mom, is Grandma still our grandmother? And my mother said, of course she is, Joe. And it was really kind of set the tone for us, and we stuck together very tightly, and we've done well.
How involved or how notified were you of the criminal investigation? Maybe not you. You were 9. But I'm sure you learned years later. Did they keep your mom abreast of what was going on? Did they tell her much of anything?
Not really. It was a different time. You know, after 9-11, where my father's godson was killed on 9-11, and I was in the Trade Center that morning, and we saw how the country rallied around. It was a very different time back then. We weren't approached by anybody, the government, Red Cross, nothing, no political people. And the investigations continued without our knowledge. We would read things in the paper, and periodically, you know, friends of my father who might be really more in tune with it would tell us. But generally speaking, until William Morales blew himself up on what would have been my dad's 37th birthday in 1978, that's really when we started finding more information. And then when the rest of them were arrested in 1981, we got a bit, but not a lot.
It was known pretty early on because they took responsibility that these so-called Puerto Rican nationalists, terrorists, the FALN, were responsible. But which specific ones? Did the police not know? Could they not charge them? What happened with trying to, you know, bring the specific killers to justice?
Yeah, it's a great question. William Morales was the known bomb maker, so he likely built the bomb that killed my father. Who actually planted the bomb? We don't know. Now, the FALN was arrested in Chicago. They had weapons. They were ready to do a kidnapping. They had blown up 130 bombs in the U.S. They were sentenced to 55 to 70, some of them up to 90 years in prison. At trial, they threatened the judge, and the judge said he would have given them the death penalty if he could. So they were essentially put away for life. And in the economics of the early 1980s, and even today, you're not going to bring people back to New York to face really the same charges and the same times in prison. So the economics of law enforcement, my friend Rick Hahn, he's an FBI agent, retired, who headed this investigation, talks about that. They were all convicted of being part of the conspiracy. And any member of a conspiracy was responsible for the actions of that conspiracy. I mean, bin Laden didn't fly any of the planes. Charles Manson didn't kill anybody. But just being part of that means that you are responsible for it. And when Clinton offered their clemency in 1999, he didn't require them to give up information about the specifics. And he clearly should have done that.
And Morales escaped.
Morales escaped. Morales blew off 9 of his fingers, half his face. He was allowed to go to Bellevue Hospital after being tried and convicted and sentenced to 89 years in prison. He was allowed to go to Bellevue Hospital to get a prosthetic devices. And somehow, a guy with one finger shimmied down a rope made of linens and was saved by the white radicals from the time the Weather Underground and that whole group was all conspired. They got him out. He ends up in Mexico, where he and another guy are in a shootout with Mexican police. They kill a Mexican cop. They get arrested. They go to prison in Mexico. Then in 1988, the Mexicans, against the Reagan administration, was trying to get him extradited to the U.S. to finish his 89-year sentence. He gets sent to Cuba, and he's been a guest of Castro ever since.
Yeah, and, you know, looking back, I mean, there was a romance about him. There, misguided. There was this idea of radical chic. I mean, what he does, if it was a movie, is a great story, except for the fact that, you know, there's your father in the ground, and that's not so compelling or thrilling.
Yeah, he killed innocent people. They were all part of the ring that did it. And, you know, you talk about, there was a movie called Legal Eagles with Robert Redford, mm-hmm. and there's a picture of Morales on the wall in the courthouse that's in that movie. So there was some sort of weird chic about these people. You know, they talked about freedom for Puerto Rico, for the Puerto Rican people, when only 3% of Puerto Rican people ever even wanted to be independent from the U.S. In the last vote, 60% voted for statehood. So they weren't interested in freeing the Puerto Rican people. They were interested in subjugating them. They were Marxist. They wanted to institute another Cuba within Puerto Rico. So it wasn't about freedom. It was about subjugation. It was about totalitarianism. And that's what these guys were all about.
And putting aside that, the tactics. I mean, that's, I think, right. The biggest thing that would change, that you could have any debate. But I think in this day and age, once anyone resorts to that, they lose the argument. But back then, not just what this group was doing, but, you know, the Weather Underground or the IRA in Ireland.
Right.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Terrorism, it was smaller scale. Your father died, but it was smaller scale. And it was seen as just one of these outgrowths of the times. The 70s were filled with incidents like this and skyjackings and
sure.
radicalism running everywhere.
Well, yeah. You see it. I mean, look at Bill Ayers has become somewhat of a celebrity. You know, there's stories that he and the president were friends. It's very difficult to grasp how people could latch on to terrorists. And we're even seeing it now. Oscar Lopez Rivera, he was one of the FALN leaders. When Clinton offered clemency in 1999, Lopez turned it down.
Yeah.
He turned down his parole hearings over this time. So finally, in 2011, he accepted a parole hearing, and I flew out to Terre Haute, Indiana, to the federal prison with my brother and some folks who were at Francis with my dad, and we actually kept him in. And now there's a push to have him given another clemency, but there's only half truths. You hear the Melissa Mark Viverito and others talking about getting him out.
Yeah,
but
she's
not
the speaker of the New York City Council, right?
Right. But they never mentioned that he turned down clemency. They never mentioned that he tried to escape. He conspired to bring a helicopter into Leavenworth Prison. It's like something Lex Luthor would do in Superman. This is the kind of people that we're dealing with, and they were very dedicated. As a matter of fact, when Clinton offered them the clemency, they didn't ask for it. It took them 30 days to decide to accept it. They left prison on September 10th, 1999, almost 2 years exactly before 9/11. And they never apologized for what they did.
Do you feel in any way connected to a larger community, either years later, the 9/11 community or other family members who died at Francis Tavern that day?
Yeah, we've gotten to know Deanie Berger. Her husband was with my father when he was killed. She and her current husband went out to Terre Haute with us. She and I introduced a bill into Congress about clemency, the Pardon Attorney Integrity Act. So we've gotten to know her. We've gotten to know some FBI agents. As far as the 9/11 families, we are one.
Yeah.
I mean, my cousin was killed, and I'm part of that group, too. And, you know, what we're seeing now with 9/11 is these prisoners being released. Eric Holder was the Deputy Attorney General in 1999 with the Clintons, who pushed their release. And it was really an effort to gain some traction for Hillary Clinton's run for 2000 Senate.
Right. So to be clear, the prisoners who were released were these Puerto Rican nationalists
yes.
were given clemency, and Holder, as the Attorney General, had to prepare documents where he noted that he thought that their sentences were disproportionate. And I think maybe from what they were convicted of, but not from some of the things that they weren't convicted of, like the bombing of the Francis Tavern.
Yeah. I mean, and that's debatable, too. at the time, the House did a study on that, and that was kind of disproven, that mm-hmm. disproportionate thing. And so I ended up testifying at Eric Holder's Senate confirmation hearing. And, you know, after 9/11, and we talked about how releasing terrorists only encouraged more terrorism, and we didn't expect that our family would be affected twice. But it was an important point that, you know, we as a country have always sworn that we wouldn't negotiate with terrorists, we wouldn't associate with terrorists, and we seem to have lost our way. So my goal is several things. One is to make sure that my father's not forgotten, and not used for politics, which he has been. Another is to get William Morales returned from Cuba now that we're normalizing relations with Cuba. And the other is to let people understand that, you know, terrorism could happen to anybody. It's happened to our family twice. And I think people need to kind of understand that is, it's there. We need to fight it. We can't allow our country to give in to these type things and become, you know, and invite more upon us. I think that's where we're headed.
How was your father used for political purposes?
Well, Hillary Clinton was running for Senate. She was planning to run for Senate in 1999. And the real reason, and the Clintons claimed executive privilege, so they never disclosed, but it's pretty obvious that there was a deal cut that they would release the FALN terrorists in exchange for votes from the Hispanic community in New York. And it sounds ridiculous
mm-hmm.
Because nobody in the Hispanic community supports terrorists. I know that. But the portrayal of the terrorists in 1999 was that they were nonviolent. True, they weren't convicted of the Francis bombing, but they were convicted of 29 bombings in Chicago that maimed people. So they were violent. It was all the perception, the portrayal. And it was a deal cut. It was a deal cut. And I said at the time that it was really hard to think that my father's life was worth less to his president than some political agenda. And I still believe that.
What does the Francis Tavern do now? They commemorate it with a plaque. Is there anything else? I mean, it must be weird. They're an ongoing business.
Yeah.
They embrace history.
Yes.
But this is this terrible tragedy that happened on its site.
Yeah, they do have a plaque there. And I've been talking to them. I was thinking, you know, the anniversary is January 24th. So it's very soon. And I thought about having a ceremony there or something. And then I kind of realized that I'd rather have something where my father lived rather than where he died.
Yeah.
And the Francis people have been terrific. And, I wrote a book called The New Founders. And mm-hmm. in the book, George Washington comes back to life. And as you pointed out, George Washington bid farewell to his officers at Francis Tavern. And in the book, we have a scene there. And I describe, it's a fiction book, obviously, but I describe my father's death there. And we bring George Washington back to talk about it and what Francis Tavern means to this country and what it meant to him. I mean, Samuel Francis was a freed slave. He was a black man, and he was a great friend of George Washington. So there's so much in Francis Tavern that is of historical significance, and that's why it was chosen by the FALN to attack.
Now, if I had to tell you my opinion about all this, I would say that, well, you did say before we don't negotiate with terrorists. We've actually negotiated with terrorists a lot. It's not great. But I think
right.
the important thing is to remember history and to keep it alive. Because when we talk about these guys, these guys who've killed people, if it's just an abstraction, and if we don't conjure a victim, it becomes a different decision than if when you say, just like with the 9/11 terrorists, I mean, there were 3,000 victims, so
right.
people are touched by them. But if there are only a few victims and you're not out there, then they become, you know, someone who made a mistake or someone with political leanings or someone who did something other than kill people. And so I think that's really important. And, you know,
thank
we
you.
Probably that's... disagree politically, but I very much appreciate what you do and your commitment to
you.
History and your dad.
You know, and I it's nice to talk to someone who doesn't agree with me, maybe politically,
yeah.
because I think at the end of the day, we're all Americans. We all want what's best for our country, and we're all people.
Thank you, Joe Connor, who has a website called We Win America and is the co-author of a book called The New Founders, which brings the founding fathers alive in America today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.